the recording with Reverend Timothy Tau, Ascension number 002007, Reel 4. Reverend Timothy, you returned from America to Singapore in 1950. How did your seminary days shape your stand on separation from doctrinal and ecclesiastical apostasy?
It greatly affected, in fact, transformed my understanding on such ecclesiastical stand through my study in the seminary in Wilmington, Delaware. So much so that I joined the International Council of Christian Churches, which arose in opposition to the World Council of Churches, the Ecumenical Movement, and the ICCC, the International Council of Christian Churches, held its second Congress in Geneva, Switzerland, August 1950. So on my way back, after graduation in May, I worked a little while in the ICCC office, and then by August, I left America for Geneva to join at the Congress as an observer from Singapore Church. And by the request of my mother church, which was the Teochew Samyateng Sheng Ming Tang Life Church, Prinsep Street, by their request, I was ordained in Geneva, in the city of John Calvin, as a minister of the gospel by 24 Bible Presbyterian American pastors. So you can see the close link between me, a young graduate, but ordained by them. So I came back filled with the spirit of the ICCC. That is the deeper connection. And this was effected by Reverend Kwek Kyok Chiang. He was an interpreter of the Chinese Secretariat in Singapore and an elder of our church. In fact, he brought the letter of request representing the elders of Life Church, Samyateng, and he was present at my ordination in Geneva.
So this stand on separation from doctrinal and ecclesiastical apostasy, can you elaborate on it for a layman who's listening to your tape?
The World Council, as well as the International Council, were both inaugurated in Geneva. Were both inaugurated in Amsterdam in 1948. The World Council of Churches represents what is today known as the ecumenical movement, and the word ecumenical in Greek means all of the inhabited earth. So it means a sort of a universalism and being a Protestant movement, it is to unite all Protestant denominations with final approach to the Roman Catholic Church, to unite with the Roman Catholic Church, and finally, all worldly religions. That is the ultimate. That is why it's called World Council of Churches. There's no word Christian. But the ICCC is International Council of Christian Churches. It is to unite all Bible-believing churches that would take a stand against ecumenism. And so Dr. Carl McIntyre, who is still living today, 92 years old he is, was a founder of the ICCC in 1948 in Amsterdam. At that time, I was a student in Faith Seminary, and he was the president of the board of directors. And I became so closely knit to Dr. McIntyre that you can call it a friendship between David and Jonathan. So you can see how closely I was a disciple of Dr. Carl McIntyre. And that is the 50th anniversary coming this August, and I have been requested to speak at this 50th anniversary of the ICCC, August 1998. And I'm preparing to go there now after 50 years.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that you work with the ICCC for a short while.
Yes, for a short while in the office. Well, it is doing odds and ends, anything like helping in the cyclostyling of messages or reading much of the material, whatever I could do there, I did. But just for a short while, maybe for 1 or 2 months. Then August came already, then we went. I was given a free seat on the chartered plane that flew from New York to London. Then from London, we work our way to Geneva.
Life BP has always been known as a separatist
church. Yes.
Why do you think so?
Because we have not joined the ecumenical meetings, and we have taken a definite, clear stand against the work of the World Council of Churches. So we are quite well known for that.
Can you share with us a little bit about financial providence when you were pastor in the 1950s?
Well, we wanted to be separate from the ecumenical movement, and our mother church being one of them, innocently not knowing anything about it, but we were just roped in through the leadership of the English Presbyterian missionaries. In those days, we were still under the English Presbyterian mission, and they were leaders of the Malayan Christian Council in those days. And the missionaries that were over us numbered perhaps over half a dozen or 10 of them. We were still under them. So in order to be sort of not under their control, we proclaimed when they first started out that we would be financially independent, which angered our mother church a little bit because they were willing to support us. We were their English-born son, as it were. But I insisted that whatever offerings come in the Sunday collection would be my salary. And we had only 30 odd adults plus the children amounting to about 45. With this we started. And I insisted that whatever comes in the bags would be my salary. So the first month's collection was $110. And I abided by it. But my wife was a midwife and she was earning 160. So together we have $270 for the first month.
And yet you had three children.
Four.
Four children to feed.
I have four children. But I was very happy because I was riding a bicycle, which my sister bought for me, a racing bicycle. And I was very happy. I said, well, serving God is to carry the cross. So whatever comes my way is from the Lord. I was very happy with it. But I also taught at Chin Lien Bible School in Geylang, and they gave me $100. So that added on, helped us to pull through on a shoestring. However, in a few months, I was getting $200. And later on, the church stipulated I receive a fixed salary. So I'll be getting something like $250 in a matter of 6 months. And we were able to carry through very frugally. But I was very happy.
When your church separated from your mother church and you started the Life BP Church, what were some of the things that you first did to organize the church together?
We did not become a BP church until 1955. Because in the meantime, we still belong to the mother church, and we worked very closely with the mother church. In other words, I would be interpreting for the mother church whenever there's a foreign speaker from English into Teochew. And sometimes I would speak in our Chinese service. As a matter of filial piety, you may say, we actually belong to our mother church, and so we were very closely knit together. And we have a very good rapport with each other, but we split in 1955 after several years of going to the synod to overture that we separate from the World Council of Churches. Of course, we got defeated. We had about 15 votes against about 46 or 50 votes. So that's the situation.
How did this come about, and how painful was it for you to be separated from the Mother Church?
We came to a head in 1955, but we still worship in the same church with our mother church for 12 years. Although we separated and we call ourselves BP, the mother church also did not care very much because we were still with them. And we began to attain financial independence. In a matter of 2 or 3 years, we were quite all right. Yeah.
How did you organize the English section of Life Church?
We had what they call borrowed elders and deacons from the mother church. They sent one or two elders and three or four deacons, and then we elect our own deacons. So that was the beginning. But later on, as we grew older and so forth, there came a clear line that those who would like to stick with the English service will now resign from the mother church and be full elders and deacons with our newly born English service. And that is how we developed and grew.
Can I get you to describe your first missionary journey to Malaya in 1951?
That was a matter of after 6 or 7 or 8 months. We felt greatly burdened. The four walls of my church could not contain me. I was very restless. So we got hold of a very dear deacon, Deacon Su Chiang Tai. He was all for it, very full of spirit, being one of the John Sung converts. He was a trader, and they opened a small store at Orchard Road, selling odds and ends, all kinds of things. And they bought a little new car, the Fiat Marvelet. It's a two-seater. And then we are ready to go. We pack our little two-seater with thousands of gospel tracts and gospel, hundreds of gospel portions. And we got a phonograph and a gospel roll of a roll of gospel posters and a loudspeaker. And we drove off, trusting the Lord, not knowing where we were exactly going, though with a final destination in Rob Pahang, where another John Sung convert, a lady, had built two Methodist churches, Rob and Bentong in Pahang. And our idea was to preach in the new villages. These were barbed wire, surrounded by barbed wire villages, new villages, to fought the communists. The uprising, we call them bandits. When you have them all concentrated behind barbed wire, they will not be able to obtain food. But if they live in a jungle area and in a rural area, they can easily find supply. But in this way, they were kept from getting supplies. But this helped us to preach the gospel because the people are concentrated. So I go there and put up a gramophone, gospel songs, and attract the children and the crowds together. Then we preach, and then we give out tracts and gospel portions, and then we go to the next village. One day we covered two such villages, and one session would take about 2 hours. And if it's two villages, it's 4 hours, but then travel in between and makan and all that.
How did you plan the trip? And why Malaysia?
Well, that is the only place we could evangelize by just driving across the causeway, and there are so many Chinese in Malaysia, and all along we went, we didn't speak English, we spoke in dialects, whether it be Hokkien, Hakka, Cantonese, Teochew, these languages we were conversant.
Did you have any obstacles with the authorities?
No, not at all. They are very happy. The authorities were the British Army. When we went there to preach the gospel, they were more than happy because we were bringing something good to the people. And in fact, on the way we met Kenyan soldiers. And if they don't smile, don't see them. It's so dark. When they smile, their teeth reveal themselves. So we went by way of Fraser's Hill, where Sir Henry Gurney, the High Commissioner for Malaya, was ambushed and killed. We went through that region too.
Did you specifically plan your traveling route?
No. We just went along as time and opportunity avail, then we stopped at one village. And so the first village we stopped was Tampin. But the interesting thing is, after preaching in the new village, we came to the old town to find a hotel. Usually you pay only $5 per night. They're called a boarding house. But lo and behold, we came and met an old friend, and he had migrated up there since during the Japanese occupation, and he opened a dispensary. He was a nurse, male nurse in Tan Tock Seng Hospital. And he's another John Soong convert. So when we're walking along the 5 foot way, he accosted, "Hey, how's it you're here?" And then we said we came preaching in the new village. We are now finding a place to stay in Tampin, the old town. He said, "Why? You must come and stay with us tonight." So that's how we found shelter. We also had a series of Holy Land slides, about 120 slides, because Reverend Quick and myself had visited the Holy Land 1950 on our way back to Singapore. So I had these slides to show to Christians. And they were very happy. They got their friends. So that night we got about 20 people and showed the Holy Land slides while we enjoyed their hospitality. And the next day we went along and we came to Seremban. And we parked our Jesus Saves car. We have a big signboard, Jesus Saves, at the back of the car. And the Methodist pastor of the town saw Jesus Saves. Someone is staying at this boarding house upstairs. So he came up and he saw me. "Oh, you are the famous American returned pastor. You cannot escape not preaching in my church." So it was a Saturday, so the next day, Sunday, I preached in the big Methodist church in Seremban. Then he said, "Oh, we got a small church in Mantin, 10 miles down. You are sure to preach for us." And my good friend Deacon Sue had a broad grin. He said, "Of course, that is your job." So we went down there, we preached in Mantin. That's how we preach, not knowing what we are doing, but the Lord opened the way. Yeah.
How long was the journey?
The journey was around 7 or 8 days.
For you to drive from Singapore to Pahang?
To Pahang. And in Pahang, we went to these new villages too, and we spoke at about 3 schools. And the principals were very cooperative. They lined up the students, about 200 of them, in one school, primary school. So we preached to them and sang to them. After that, we gave them Gospels of John portions. And that's how we went along. Then we met the Kenyan soldiers in Bentong, and they wanted to see the slides. So in the evening, we showed the slides. They were very happy. These soldiers are mostly Christian. You know, Africans, a lot of them are Christian. So we spoke in English.
What were the response of the villagers like?
Very happy. They did not oppose. At first, I thought that we were selling Tiger Balm because it made a lot of noise, the music. But then they saw we are preaching the gospel. And of course, the shopkeepers, they don't come out. They just, we have a loudspeaker, can hear. But usually it's the children and women, they come in here. We can get a crowd of, say, 50, 70, like that. But after that, we go to the shops and give them the literature one by one. They know that we have come and we give them gospel literature. They did not oppose, they received them.
So what happened to those who come to accept the faith?
We would say that accept the faith, they receive it, but we just sow the seed, and with the gospel portions we give to them, we trust that the Lord would work out something, but ours was just sowing the seed. And another way of preaching was, as we were coming up from Singapore to upcountry, there was a lot of road repair after the war. So we have a lot of Tamil tracks, and all these are Tamil coolies. We do not have to stop. Just when they get near to where they are repairing the road, we just throw out one watt of Tamil gospel track, and they all go and pick, and that's our job.
How did the second missionary journey differ from the first?
The second missionary journey From the first, it took us over 2 weeks because we went up to Alostar, to Kedah. And on the way, as we passed by Penang, we went to join the Chin Lin Bible School and the Evangelistic League. These are the followers of John Sung. They had a Bible camp up Penang Hill. So we went there and joined them for a night. And with Christian fellowship and also report to them the work, which of course they readily received, plus showing the Holy Land slides, which they enjoyed. And then we went on up to Alostar. There's a Baptist church there. We preach in the Baptist church. And along the way, we stopped also at some of these towns and new villages.
Yeah, Alostar and in these new villages. Do you have encounters with Muslims?
No, we just tackle the Chinese.
Reverend Toh, what happened to the flock, as in the church members, when you were away on such missionary trips?
There was no problem because it's a short while, 1 week and 2 weeks. And in my absence, we always got some preacher to take over on the Sunday pulpit. But we did not merely have these two trips. We went several times on the East Coast. And we went up to Endau. Along the way would be Kota Tinggi. We also preached there. And then Jemaluang and Mersing and Endau. So we have got 4 or 5 villages or towns along the way we also evangelize. And as a result of that, we got hold of Jemaluang for an American Chinese girl. Her name is Adeline Cha, whom we contacted in Geneva at a conference. And she wrote me, said, "I feel called to Singapore." So we led her to go to Jemaluang, where she established her mission. And from Jemaluang, she extended another mission to Endau. And Endau is still going on, but Jemaluang has sort of become defunct. And we went to see the British administrative district officer in Mersing. Endau, Jemaluang is under Mersing. And we went in and said, "Can you please give us a place where you can build a church?" And he gave to us right away. "All right." He showed us on the map, "This is near the police station, quite safe for you. Triangular piece of land, you can build a church there." We got the land like that. Because they were sorely in need of missionaries, anyone that can minister to the people now, all behind barbed wires, they felt that it would be an asset.
Can you describe the Malaysia Pioneer Movement that was mentioned in your book?
That is our pioneer mission. And out of the 2 missionary journeys to West Malaysia, not counting East Malaysia, out came a station called Kelapa Sawit, which we took over permanently in 1954. We went in 1951 and 52. But as a result of our going up there, we went to Kelapa Sawit after this several more times. And the Evangelistic League, that is the John Sung Group, and Life Church jointly took over this Kelapa Sawit, 26-mile Kulai Road. And after some years, Life Church took it all over. Now, this coming Sunday, I'm going there to speak at their 46th anniversary.
At Kulai?
At Kelapa Sawit. I'm going this coming Sunday. Because I was linked with it since 1954. But it was founded in 1952 by Dr. Andrew Ji of China, with the cooperation of Ms. Leona Wu of the Chin Lin Bible School, who is very close to me because I was teaching in Chin Lien Bible School. So after 2 years, Dr. Andrew Jik gave up. So Miss Leona Wu asked me if Life Church would join in with an evangelistic league to take over this village. And I said, all right, we'll Gongsi, we'll do it.
Yeah.
Gongsi, we'll do it. But after some years, it came under Life Church, and it's still under Life Church, as it were, spiritually. Now they're independent, but they always try to get us to preach there, and we still minister to them.